The time is 6 o'clock. This is Radio Ghana. The news presented by Mercy Sowa
and Abraham Donko.
In the headlines, London court to decide Nayile's fate today. Mixed reactions to economic prospects for this year. NPP blames high fuel prices on economic failure of government. Monthly SNIT pension allowance increased by 15%. 7 killed in attack linked to Al-Qaeda in Mali. And U.S. denounces move by Israel to freeze tax revenue to Palestine. First, the summary with Abraham Donko.
The Ghanaian woman who was busted in the UK for carrying 12.5 kilograms of cocaine, Nayile Metefe, will reappear before the Crown Court in the UK today. The case, which created controversy in Ghana, was adjourned in November last year after she pleaded guilty to all charges leveled against her. The corporate affairs manager of the Social Security and National Insurance Trust, SNIT, Ms. Evangelina Megashi, has announced that the corporation has increased the monthly pension allowance by 15%. In an interview with Radio Ghana, Ms. Megashi said the increment will take effect from this month. And the U.S. has condemned a move by the Israeli government to freeze tax revenues to the Palestinian authorities due to their bid to join the International Criminal Court. A State Department spokeswoman, Jean Psaki, in a statement said this action will create difficulties in returning to direct negotiations between the two countries.
Radio Ghana, meeting the news challenge with credible information.
The news in detail. The Ghanaian woman busted in the UK for carrying 12.5 kilograms of cocaine to that country, Ruby Apia, alias Nayile Ametepe, will reappear before the Crown Court at Alworth in the UK today. The case was adjourned in November last year after she pleaded guilty to all charges leveled against her. Nayile's arrest and subsequent trial have generated huge controversy in Ghana. 12 people are standing trial in Ghana in connection with the case. The Narcotics Control Board, NACOB, has also come under intense criticism for failing to prevent the drugs from leaving the country, even though it claims it collaborated with the British government on this bust. Reports indicate she managed to travel with a huge quantity of cocaine through the VIP lounge at the Kotoka International Airport.
2014 for many Ghanaians was difficult and challenging, ranging from inflation, power outages, which affected industries, to countless labor unrests. 2015 is here and was ushered in with encouraging words of hope. Radio Ghana's current affairs program Behind the News, on its first program for the year, looked at 2014 and prospects for 2015 with political parties. The General Secretary of the PNC, Bernard Mona, said although 2014 was challenging, he hopes in 2015 the Consume Made in Ghana campaign will be intensified to reduce the importation of products to create jobs for Ghanaians. Mr. Mona also wants to see an end to the energy crisis.
It is my expectation that the Consume Made in Ghana products and produce campaign will be accentuated so that we'll be able to ensure that most of the things that we import, which leads to debilitating terms of trade, which affects our balance of payment, will be checked. For instance, it is my view that we could stop the importation of rice so that the over $600 million that we spend on the importation of rice can stay in this economy.
Okay.
If it stays in this economy, it will generate jobs for our people. If it stays in this economy, it will stay income in the pockets of Ghanaians. If it stays in this economy, it means we will not be exporting jobs to the foreigner, whilst creating unemployment for our young people. It's also my expectation that the Minister for Finance, the Minister of Trade and Industry, and in particular the Minister for Agri, will put in measures that are necessary to revamp the various industries. And finally, that the energy sector will have to be looked at. The decision by the Energy Commission to limit solar production to 20 or renewable energy to 20 megawatts is distasteful and will not help the growth of the energy sector in this nation.
General Secretary of the PNC, Bernard Mona. The MP for Obuasi West, Kwaku Kwarteng, outlining the challenges in 2014, predicted that 2015 is going to be more tighter as government seeks support from the IMF. He suggested that government take serious the campaign to identify and deal with corruption in all spheres of the economy and embark on radical institutional reforms.
The only real way out, which I am very doubtful that this government will be willing to pursue, are just two. One, government must take clear steps to cut the corruption. We cannot continue to have the waste and the corruption we're seeing on the payrolls in government contracts that in the past were given for 200,000, these days are being given for 300, 400, 500. Government has to cut the waste and the corruption. Government has to embark on radical reform. Those private public sector institutions that can live on their internally generated funds will have to be made to live on their internally generated funds. If government cannot do these two things, my expectation is that we will end 2015 with still the problems on our hands to deal with.
With your two solutions, the second one, radical reforms in public sector, well, what about the first one? Cutting down issues, you talk of contracts that were given, say, 200, now 300. Is it not also because of the fact that things are high, cost of inputs are very high, cost of labor is very high, so that if you are taking contract today, you have to put the figure high and able to pay your workers compared to the past?
Well, we can look at how much the salaries of workers who work for contractors have increased over the last 6 years and compare it with the escalation in contract prices. Let's not play around this. Things that private sector people can deliver for a price of X, if it is delivered by government agencies, it goes to 2X. It is a present problem. We have to deal with it. And two, the payroll fraud we see. Government must embark on those digital introductions in our payroll systems so that it will work. The investments our donors have made in government, we must begin to pay attention and let those things work. My conclusion is that the political will to do this must be radiated clearly from the president so that all those who follow him would know that we are in a new regime. If things continue, if the corruption continues, I tell you, 2015 will be a much more difficult year than we are even fearing now.
MP for Obuasi West, Kweku Kwarteng, in the view of CPP's Deputy Director of Communications, Ernesto Yaboa, 2015 must be the year where Ghanaians take frantic steps to own the economy by breaking free from donor conditionalities which overburdens the people. Mr. Yaboa insisted there will be no improvement in the economy in 2015.
Talk about sitting with the IMF and listening to their dictates in terms of tightening the budget and introducing austerity measures, removing subsidies, freezing wages, freezing public sector employment and all that. So we don't expect anything better in 2015.
And also, to be fair to the IMF, government has over the period said that they are going to do what they call homegrown policies and not necessarily directives or dictates from the IMF.
A homegrown policy in this particular analysis is more or less like the IMF almost all the time bringing the rope so that they hang it around your neck and then they squeeze it or turn the noose and then you die. But this time around, the IMF is around and government is saying that, okay, you give me the rope, let me tie it around my neck myself. And what is the difference? Our CD alone has depreciated more than 1.5 million percent since 1966. So how can you be talking about growth in an economy where your currency has depreciated by more than 1.5 million percent. Now, what the CPP proposes as solution is something that neither the NDC nor the MPP are ready to do. First of all, you cannot be talking about progress in an economy you don't own. We must own the economy first. And when we talk about owning the economy, talk about our resources, gold. Which group of people own our gold? 97% of our gold is controlled by foreigners in our own country.
But that cannot be reversed, can it?
Well, we need a political party. We need a leadership that has the balls to be able to reverse these things.
I mean, international laws and conventions?
Certainly. I mean, why can't it be reversed? It can be done. Other countries have done it and we can do it. But it will take political leadership to be able to have some of these things done.
CPP's Deputy Director of Communications, Ernesto Yaboa. A Deputy Minister in charge of tertiary education, Samuel Okudjetua Blakwa, was hopeful that 2015 will be a good year. He hinted that the free education policy of the NDC will be rolled out this year.
We expect that we will have taken off with the free SHS program to benefit some 365,000 day students. We expect that we'll have distributed 500,000 school uniforms to our deprived districts and students. We expect that we'll have distributed teaching and learning materials, printed about 6 million textbooks for our students. We expect that we'll have expanded the school feeding program, we'll have expanded the capitation grant. By the end of 2016, we expect that we'll have begun actual construction of the University for Environment and Sustainable Development in the Eastern Region. We expect that we should have also gone very far in the conversion of the 10 polytechnics into technical universities. We expect also that we will have started some work on the additional construction of 10 colleges of education. We also expect that teacher absenteeism will have inched closer to single digits, to 0%. Really, that should be what it should be, and that's our target by 2016, that teacher absenteeism should go down to 0%. We also expect that we will have continued to lift standards and ensure that quality education, especially at the basic level, will be achieved, and it will be obvious for all.
A Deputy Minister in charge of tertiary education, Samuel Okojie-Toablakwa, a senior lecturer at the University of Cape Coast, and an economist, Dr. John Gatti, said 2015 offers an opportunity for government to address challenges which confronted the country in 2014, particularly the energy crisis.
I think we should expect that some of the major problems of 2014 should be addressed to allow for enhanced economic activity that will ensure increased productivity, and that will help us meet the set target for 2015. I'm referring especially to the energy sector. In fact, when there is some enhancement in the energy sector, that will also have a reflection on management of currency and diversification of the economy. If you look at the 2015 budget, some indication has been made that about 150 million standard cubic feet of gas will be produced by the gas processing plant to enhance generation needs in the country. They have also indicated about 90% completion point of some projects at Takoradi thermal plant and some other project that will contribute to enhancement of generation in the country, coupled with some enhancement within the transmission and distribution sector within ECG and GRIDCO. All these things that they have indicated to us do come on stream. Some of them are expected to come first quarter. Then I think we will be seeing a reform economic activity in 2015.
Before you take leave of us, many have predicted a very tight economy this year. Do you see same?
Well, in terms of financing,
yes.
There is still going to be some tightening because we are dealing with fighting deficit. The budget as read to us already show that there is going to be deficit again. Revenue is far less than expenditure. So those things are still with us. But we need to be minded that these things were very pronounced because the energy situation was also very bad. So that is what I think. If this pipeline of projects begin to deepen enhancement in the energy subsector, the overall effect of these difficulties will be reduced somehow.
That was a senior lecturer at the University of Cape Coast and an economist, Dr. John Gatti, speaking on our current affairs program, Behind the News.
Stakeholders in education will be meeting today in Accra to consider the prospects of converting polytechnics into universities. The Deputy Minister in charge of tertiary education, Samuel Okojie-Toablakwa, said the draft bill is ready and stakeholders will be expected to make input into it.
The conversion of polytechnics to technical, that's also the technical committee finished its work. The draft bill is ready and will be meeting at La Palma at 9:30 a.m. Experts and stakeholders will gather to look at the draft report and the draft bill. So I would say that in summary, a lot was achieved, and we are quite impressed about the support that we received from everybody, teachers, non-teaching staff, parents, the students themselves, because education is everybody.
Deputy Minister of Education in charge of tertiary education, Samuel Okojie-Toablakwa. The news comes to you from Radio Ghana, Accra. The major stories. London court to decide Nayile's fate today. Mixed reactions to economic prospects for this year. NPP blames high fuel prices on economic failure of government. Monthly SNEC pension allowance increased by 15%. 7 killed in attack linked to Al-Qaeda in Mali, and U.S. denounces move by Israel to freeze tax revenue to Palestine.
Welcome back. Following last Saturday's fire outbreak at the warehouse belonging to Melcom Plus, Radio Ghana's Afanaya Dana and Priscilla Numnoy visited the site at the North Industrial Area in Accra to assess the situation on the ground.
After fire gutted the warehouse belonging to Melcom, the atmosphere at the place was calm, with some workers seen walking in and out of the warehouse. Some Melcom branded vehicles were also seen parked at the entrance of the building. Some parts of the building has been blackened as a result of smoke from the fire. When Radio Ghana's reporters attempted to gain access to the warehouse, they were stopped by the security men at the gate. They said it was an order from their bosses not to allow anybody enter the warehouse.
Zafanaya Dana and Priscilla Numnoy filed that report.
Meanwhile, the public relations officer of Melcom, Godwin Avenogbo, in an interview said the cause of the fire is still unknown and Melcom is awaiting the outcome of investigations by the Ghana National Fire Service.
No, investigation is still going on by the National Fire Service. They haven't given us a report yet. The area that the fire started is the place we use for maintenance work on the electronic appliance. So quite a number of the damage has affected the television sets particularly, and a few other items. We're still taking stock. We know exactly how many items were lost and the value of those items. Today is the first working day, as you remember, and it will take a couple of days more for us to get back. Fire is an accident. Fire is a hazard. A center was closed during public holidays. No staff was working there. The place was not opened. No conditioner was switched on. No gadgets were switched on. Then at dawn, 3:30, 3:40 a.m. on Saturday, there was fire noticed by the security man on duty. And then the fire alarm also sounded. And then we had to respond by calling the fire service. The call was not going through, so personal contacts were made. And then a car was released to go to the fire service to bring the fire tender. And all that was done. So these are efforts that were made. And of course, what we also did, which I want to be on record, was to arrange for 25 water tankers to supply water to the National Fire Service to help in fighting the fire. Well, image certainly, yes, because an official of the fire service gave a wrong impression that too many fires in Melcom. I think that was not scientific, that was not based on facts. And I think that was an unguarded statement to be made by anybody who is dealing with fire. I'll tell you what, the old Melcom fire happened in 2004. The Swede Roof fire in 2012. That's 8 years. These were accidental developments. And the Swede Roof fire also happened late night, at dawn. This is an establishment that is in every region in Ghana except the Upper West region. So these things are likely to happen. But we need to get to the fire service to give us the cause of the fire. And then we have a scientific basis on which to discuss this. The loss is to Melcom, seriously. It's a huge loss. From what I saw during the salvaging exercise, that whole block has to come down. Expansion programs are going on. Progress is being made to open a few more shops this year to extend services to other areas. What will be the immediate outcome of this is that Christmas is over, New Year is over. We need to do restocking of various shops of electrical goods. So that will delay because we need permission now to access the building in order that we can provide service and supply to other areas. That will be our immediate concern for now. That's a handicap.
That was the public relations officer of Melcom, Godwin Avenogbo.
The NPP cited what it calls the government's poor fiscal and economic mismanagement as the price Ghanaians have to pay for the high fuel cost. According to the NPP, the debt government owes the bulk distribution companies is as a result of the so-called forex losses, which occurred as a result of poor financial mismanagement, which has seen the price of the dollar rising to over 150% in just 6 years. A statement signed by the party's director of communications, Nana Akumia, said Ghanaians are now bearing the brunt of the government's failure by paying higher than necessary for their fuel. The statement said, regrettably, the recent revision of fuel prices pegged the price at over 13 Ghana cedis per gallon, which means Ghanaians are paying about 30% more for every gallon of petrol when they should not be buying a gallon of petrol at not more than 10 Ghana cedis. The statement called on government not to throw overboard the formula for fuel price adjustments, which has been in place over the years. It said the formula is now a social pact between government and the people, and that should be respected.
Making an input into how to solve the problems confronting GVC, 90-year-old Patrick Sedo, who once served as board chairman and acting director general of GVC, says it's possible for the corporation to overcome its challenges. From his experience, he believes GVC can't generate enough revenue to take care of its logistical challenges. GVC sought Mr. Sedo's thoughts as the corporation celebrates its 80th anniversary. Cynthia Boateng reports.
Mr. Patrick Sedo served as chair of the Civil Service Commission. He was the first African to chair UNESCO before taking the mantle as board chair at GBC. He served the corporation from 1988 to 1993. He is a diplomat with many awards to his credit, among which are the Order of the Volta and a gold medal for being a member of the executive board of UNESCO from 1980 to 1983 and subsequently the chairman of UNESCO from 1983 to 1985. At 90, Mr. Sedo looked healthy and spoke audibly. He recalled his term of office at GBC and described it as challenging.
I had already retired from the public service before I was appointed to the board. But during my time, the initial period was also difficult because the technicians went on strike and most of them were dismissed. And I must say that at the point I said, look, I have retired from the service, so I should really be having my peace. But here I am, the technicians will not give you your leisure, and then on the board also, I mean, you are dragging matters and whatnot, you know, because BBC is not having competition from private televisions. And sometimes, because of the problems I had, I did not enjoy that position at all.
He believes GBC can do more in the midst of competition to generate funds internally, especially with a collection of TV licenses.
So far, they've done well in the face of state competition. They should continue to do well, but I think the GBC must be given the way to, well, have a financial freedom so that they can improve.
On politics and economic challenges facing the country, Mr. Sedo said Ghanaians should be patient, diligent, and keep hope alive.
Cynthia Boateng filed that report.
The Social Security and National Insurance Trust, SNIT, has increased the monthly pension allowance by 15%. Corporate Affairs Manager Evangelina Megashi said the increment takes effect from this month. In an interview with Radio Ghana, Ms. Megashi said the minimum monthly pension for fresh pensioners is now 230 Ghana cedis, while all monthly pensions as of 31st December 2014 will be increased by a fixed rate.
See if the doctor is the common advice one receives from a relative, friend or neighbor when he or she complains of headache or stomach ache. This is because they believe the doctor is professionally trained to understand the symptoms of every disease and prescribes the right drugs that can treat all sicknesses. His duty is also to help the sick have full knowledge of the ailment and the procedure involved in treating specific illnesses. But some doctors are only prescribing drugs for their patients without giving them information pertaining to their ailments. Godwin Alariwe in this piece finds out the reasons for the inability of some doctors to play this vital role of giving information to their patients.
According to the patient's charter, the patient is entitled to full information on his or her condition and the possible risks involved in the treatment, except in emergency situations when the patient is unable to make a decision and the need for treatment is urgent. However, in Ghana, doctors' diagnoses are only known by bereaved families after a patient dies and autopsy is conducted. The question is, are patients even aware of their right to know the doctor's diagnosis and the medication given to them? Some patients spoke to Radio Ghana on this.
I've been treated. My doctor did not mention it to me that this is what I'm treating you for. I believe it was fever and the medication given to me was going to treat it. My doctor didn't explain those aspects to me.
Did you ask the doctor?
No, I didn't.
You know you have the right to ask the doctor.
Yeah, I do.
How long have you been on this bed?
All day.
Did they tell you what is wrong with you?
I said that had diarrhea.
What medication have they given you?
I don't know the name.
You only asked me what was wrong with me, and after describing what was wrong with me, she just wrote something.
But she didn't tell you the diagnosis?
No, she didn't tell me, but I knew from what I'm feeling that I have malaria.
He didn't tell me what is wrong with him, but after I prescribed the medicine for us, we are coming to take the drugs and go.
No, he didn't say anything to me. I don't know.
We are in laptop and I brought the receipt to them. She just wrote something on it and I think that she bring it here for medicine.
On what basis do doctors violate their ethics to deny patients their right to information that pertain to their ailments? This is what some doctors at the Legon and Achimota hospitals and the Mamobi General Hospital, who would want to remain anonymous, had to say.
Primarily, the most important thing is privacy and confidentiality. Privacy in terms of providing the privacy during that interaction. So the place where that interaction is, you need to provide that because it makes the patient comfortable enough to give that information. And the confidentiality is what you do with the information that the patient gives you. So you are supposed to provide the privacy and confidentiality. The other aspect is the fact that the patient should be safe and the person's interest should also count.
In terms of information flow, your client tells you this is how my body feels. You tell them or diagnose.
Most of the time, what effect said is that you tell the patient what you have found, what you think is wrong with the person.
Most of the time. That it means you don't get the time to tell every patient or client what you found.
Time. Sometimes it's language barrier because, believe you me, it's very difficult to translate some of those English words in Portuguese or any other languages. You seem not to find the right term to explain. So those are some of the things that affect your ability.
Unfortunately, some of us, maybe because the clinics are busy or maybe out of oversight, it does happen. But that's not what we were taught and that's not how we were trained.
In terms of medication, do you tell the patient the type of medication, the name or side effect?
Yes, any patient you see, you diagnose, you should treat, and in the treatment, the patient should know.
So you keep saying that's what we're taught, that's how the ethics stipulate, but in most cases, patients are not told by the doctor the diagnosis or the type of medication they need. Is that true?
I can't deny that fact. It happened.
Dr. Frank Sibor is the General Secretary of the Ghana Medical Association, and he also had this to say on the issue.
Most often, the patients come in, and instead of telling the doctor what is wrong with them, they start by telling the doctor the diagnosis. Now, most doctors or health workers usually get angry because of that. And the issue is that they start saying, if you know what is wrong with you, then why are you here? Why don't you go and manage yourself? But, I believe that that is an opportunity for us to be able to interact with the patients and also to let them understand them the way they think, why they believe that this is their diagnosis. So that at the end of the day, if the doctor disagrees, he's able to tell the patient that, look, yes, you think that you have this disease, you have malaria or whatever it is, but hey, the signs and symptoms that you have just enumerated, it does not support your diagnosis. I believe this is what is wrong with you. And if there are anything that has to be done, and in so doing, you may be able to educate your patient better than just saying that because the patient has told you some kind of diagnosis, you are angry and you shout at the patient and you don't interrupt the patient. So it is quite important that we do that. We interact with the patients, we let them understand what is wrong with them. But the bottom line is that we can't do it for everyone, but at least for patients who we believe that their diagnosis, there's a need for them to get involved in their management, we have to talk to them. Because most often than not, we interact with our patients in the local language, we translate to English or US so that we can write. So you hardly get a patient who comes into your consulting room, you can interact in English directly. So most often, you are able to interact with them in the local language together. So just as you are able to interact with them in the local language, you should also be able to explain the little bit of whatever you have done in whatever local language that the patient can understand, so that at the end of the day, you are permitted to use the English language where your terminologies or your vocals is limited. But invariably, the patient will understand that after all, they say, I have this disease. The doctor is unable to tell me the local language or the name of the disease in my local language. But when he explains the disease to me, this is what the disease means. Okay, so that let's say a patient comes in, I say this patient has hepatitis. And I say, okay, you have hepatitis. Maybe let's say hepatitis B infection. Patient doesn't understand why hepatitis. But at least the patient knows the liver. So if you mention liver in your local language and say that there is an infection in the liver, okay, and that is the reason why you are seeing A, B, C, D. So I'm going to give you a drug that will prevent the infection from progressing. The patient knows that, yes, you have not mentioned hepatitis in it, but he knows that the problem is with the liver. So that when he is going on, he understands in his mind. So I think it's not a very good approach to say that we can't speak the language, and so, or we can't translate directly into the language, and so that is it. There are times that patients will have to go on medication for a long time. If you don't explain to the patient the reason why he has to take this medication for so long, the patient will go home and will not take the drug for that long. probably take it for a day or 2 weeks and stop because he does not understand what is wrong with him or her. For the patient, it's a very simple thing. The issue is that whatever it is, the doctor is your doctor, it's your friend. As much as there should be some mutual respect, the patient should be respected, the doctor should be respected. So he is not a god. He may not know everything, but even when he doesn't know, still have the right to ask.
Godwin Alori was speaking to some patients and doctors on patient-doctor relationship. On the foreign front, at least 7 people have been killed after fighters linked to Al-Qaeda attacked an army camp in central Mali near the Mauritanian border. The attack occurred in Nampala, which has the largest military installation in the region. And the U.S. has denounced a move by Israel to freeze the transfer of tax revenues to the Palestinian Authority in retaliation against their bid to join the International Criminal Court, ICC.
That's one of the main points again. The Ghanaian woman who was busted in the UK for carrying 12.5 kilograms of cocaine, Naila Metefe, will reappear before the Crown Court in the UK today. And Senate has increased the monthly pension allowance by 15%. The news was presented by Abraham Donko
and Mercy Sowah in Accra.